Welcome back to Two-Way Street. I'm Bill Nigut. I'm talking to John Meacham about his new book, Destiny and Power, The American Odyssey of George Herbert Walker Bush. When we left off, Meacham had just described the circumstances that led to President Bush's loss to Bill Clinton in 1992. As Meacham describes, it was a harsh blow to Bush, who felt he needed a second term to accomplish all of his goals for the country. At that time, I was covering presidential politics for WSB-TV in Atlanta and had spent a lot of time reporting on George H.W. Bush, on the campaign trail in 1988 as well as 92, and during his term in the White House. One of the most interesting episodes in my career came on Election Eve, 1992. The Bush campaign contacted me and said that President Bush wanted to do one last interview before voting began the next day. The logistics were almost impossible. He was in Houston preparing for a final rally. I was in our newsroom in Atlanta. But we managed to hook up by telephone. And as you'll hear, it turns out this was the last interview President Bush ever gave as a candidate for office. As he and I talked, no matter what he says, he sounded to me like a man resigned to defeat. Because one of the most poignant sections of Meacham's book is Bush's reaction to that 92 loss, I played him a short excerpt from the interview. One caution, the audio isn't great because of the hurried way it was arranged, but you should have no trouble understanding Bush's remarks.
I've never wavered. I have never seen the national press as ugly. We got this bumper sticker, annoy the media, re-elect Bush. And I know that sounds, some must be skeptical as they listen to pollster after pollster decreeing otherwise. But all I say is the voters of Georgia have it in their hands tomorrow. And I hope they'll go and vote for George Bush based on trust, character, world peace, and domestic progress. This is my last interview before the election, and I'm very pleased it's with you.
One night after he and I did that interview, he's sitting again. He's in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton has been declared the winner. Barbara is
asleep.
Sleeping.
Yeah.
And he goes into what, his office?
He goes into, he stayed at the until they built a house that they're still in, they stayed at the Houstonian Hotel.
Okay.
And a suite, suite 271. Showing that I've spent too much time on this, that I knew that. went back into the living room. And he dictates that he can't believe he just lost to a draft dodger.
He whispers. He's whispering.
Yeah.
The job is not finished. That kills me.
Doesn't want to disturb her. And he's just, his voice is giving out. And what's so wonderful about the scene, though, is that even in the dark, even at the lowest moment, he tries to look ahead. This is 12:15 a.m. Central Standard Time. I ache and I now must think. How do you keep your chin up, keep your head up through a couple of difficult days ahead? He kept his voice low. Barbara, his devoted wife of 47 years, was asleep back in the bedroom. Quote, I think of our country and the people that are hurting, and there is so much we didn't do. And yes, progress that we made, but no, the job is not finished, and that kills me. But then at the end of the entry, he says this, be strong, be kind, be generous of spirit, be understanding. Let people know how grateful you are. Don't get even. Comfort the ones I've hurt and let down. Say your prayers and ask for God's understanding and strength. Finish with a smile and with some gusto. Do what's right and finish strong. So even at the worst moment, he talked himself back into the game.
So after all the time over the years you spent with George H.W. Bush, after absorbing, interviewing other people, reading the histories of the presidency as he lived it in his earlier career, what did you come away from this whole experience thinking about him?
That he's an emotionally complex man who had the country's interests at heart. In the end, he tried to put the country first within the human limitations that ambition and appetite give all of us.
Given the field that we are looking at right now, will we ever see his likes again?
No. No, we damn near didn't the first time. we've gone from a man who could barely talk about himself to a front runner who can talk about nothing but himself. I don't want to be sentimental about it and all that, but it was only a quarter century ago. So it's only been 25 years less since they called you and wanted to do the last interview.
Yeah.
It's just the day before yesterday. It's like talking about JFK in the middle of the Reagan years. The lesson I hope we can take away from his presidency, from his life, is that good people can be we should reward good people in the arena. And he didn't mind reaching across the aisle. Now, the middle way is not always the right way, but big national progress has historically happened in this country when people have cooperated more than they have been in perpetual conflict with one another. And Bush's life is a testament to consensus and compromise in the best sense of those terms.
I've been talking with Pulitzer Prize-winning author John Meacham about his new book, Destiny and Power, The American Odyssey of George Herbert Walker Bush. Meacham is able to shed new light on Bush's character and personal story because the former president gave him unfettered access to the audio diaries that Bush kept from the 1960s well into the 1990s. The South, and Georgia especially, played a very big role in the final weeks of President Bush's 1992 re-election campaign. The electoral math indicated that he really needed to win every Southern state to beat Bill Clinton. But Bush faced significant challenges. First, of course, the fact that Clinton himself was a Southerner. Nevertheless, starting in 1980, Southerners who identified themselves as Reagan Democrats had reliably voted for every Republican candidate for president. But in 1992, those Southern Democrats had grown disenchanted with President Bush. They were angry that he'd broken his Read My Lips pledge not to raise taxes, and they saw him as a patrician, out of touch with the economic troubles faced by ordinary Southerners. So surprisingly, the South became the most competitive region in the country that year. In May, I'd arranged for Governor Clinton to fly into Atlanta to participate in a live town hall meeting I moderated in the studios of WSB. For months after that, I pestered Bush campaign officials to bring the president to town for a similar session. Finally, in October, when the polls began to show Clinton moving out front and the South slipping from their grasp, the Bush team relented, and we arranged for the president to come to Atlanta for a town meeting with a group of several dozen undecided voters.
Earlier today, just 2 weeks to the day when voters from across the country will go to the polls in national elections, President Bush took his campaign for re-election to Georgia. He began his day with a trip to the studios of WSB-TV in Atlanta, where he participated in an Ask George Bush forum.
It was an unprecedented event. To the best of my knowledge, no sitting president had ever done a television broadcast with one local TV station before. And as we started, it was obvious that the president wasn't altogether comfortable being in that situation. As you'll hear, he's hesitant and speaks in an unsure voice as the program began.
Mr. President, we're delighted that you could be with us in Georgia this evening. We have, as you know, an audience of 33 people who say they are still undecided voters. So this is your opportunity to address their questions tonight.
That sounds like a reasonable deal.
Let me...
relatively sane and
a good group, I think. Yeah.
As I think back on that day now, it occurs to me it must have felt just a little bit diminishing for a man who had played out his career on a world stage to find himself in the awkward position of subjecting himself to a quizzing by a local TV reporter in Atlanta. But here's the thing about the differences between George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton at those town meetings. Clinton exuded charm and showed his whip-smart intellect during the show, but he largely ignored the studio audience during the breaks. President Bush didn't have that Clinton magic while we were on the air, but at every break, he took time to talk with the audience, making humorous remarks, treating them like neighbors. It was 2 weeks later, on November 2nd, which was Election Eve, that I was given the opportunity to do the interview with the president that we played an excerpt from earlier in the show. It unfolded in a fascinating sequence of events. I was at home, having turned in what I thought was my final report of the campaign. But at about 7:30, my assignment desk called me to tell me the president's campaign was trying to reach me. I was asked to call White House Signal, a switchboard that can get anyone to high-ranking administration officials at any moment of the day or night. When I called, I was patched through to what I learned a few minutes later was Air Force One. The president was on his way to Houston for a final major rally before Election Day. Would I be willing to do an interview with him before the rally started? Well, of course I would. What reporter wouldn't? Arrangements were made hastily. An ABC News crew assigned to cover the Houston rally was pulled out of the Astro Arena where the president would speak to his supporters. Campaign workers escorted the crew to a small trailer serving as a holding room for the president. I, meanwhile, made my way back to WSB. Because we didn't have time to arrange for a satellite uplink, the president and I talked by telephone. The crew in Houston videotaped the president on his end, and a crew in Atlanta shot me here. Those closing days of the campaign against Clinton had not been good to President Bush. The final polls all showed him losing by a substantial margin. And yet in the video of his end of the conversation, he appears relaxed and in as upbeat a mood as one could possibly expect from a man who seemed to know he was facing probable defeat. In the hall next to the trailer, some 15,000 supporters waited to cheer him on. This would be his last moment of quiet before he'd have to summon the energy for a final campaign speech. Our conversation lasted for about 4 or 5 minutes, and we were able to put it on the air at 11 o'clock that night. The reasons that Bush and his team wanted to do this last-minute interview are still a mystery to me. It wasn't one of a series of interviews he gave that night. This was a one-off, arranged to give him one final chance to reach Georgia voters in the hours before the polls opened. Here's what I suspect. The Bush team knew by then that the president probably was not going to be elected for a second term. I think they simply hoped to find some bright spots on the electoral map as a consolation prize for a man his staff and friends revered. On election eve, Georgia still seemed winnable. Why not call a local reporter and try to push the state in Bush's direction? It didn't work out. Bill Clinton won Georgia, but he beat Bush here by just 13,700 votes, the smallest margin of victory for Clinton of any state in 1992. To this day, I'm touched when I think about the way President Bush ended our conversation on that long-ago election night.
This is my last interview before the election, and I'm very pleased it's with you.
But I know the truth behind that comment. It wasn't about me. It was about him. Because that's who George H.W. Bush is, a man who was unfailingly kind and generous of spirit in his personal interactions. People often accuse political journalists of seeing the candidates they cover through a liberal lens. They think we make judgments about those who don't share our political views that show up in our reporting. I don't doubt for a minute that this is sometimes true. But I have to say that in my years covering politics, I was probably influenced less by ideology and more by the way in which the people I covered treated me and the others around them on a human level. In his two runs for the White House, President Bush was called a lot of names by the media. In 1987, Newsweek ran a famous cover story headlined, George Bush, Fighting the Wimp Factor, and that demeaning title stuck to him for the rest of his political career. But my point is not whether George Bush was a great campaigner or whether I personally agreed with his politics. It's this. Through all of his problems, George Herbert Walker Bush displayed grace, politeness, and a self-effacing sense of humor. To this day, he is a gentleman in the best sense of the word. There aren't many of those left in politics, but those are the traits I came to know in my years of covering him, and that's what John Meacham saw and writes about in his new Bush biography. That's all the time we have for this week's Two-Way Street. If you'd like to watch the town meeting I hosted with President Bush at WSB-TV in 1992, we've posted a link on the Two-Way Street Facebook page. We've also posted a link where you can watch the video we shot in Houston of George H.W. Bush talking to me on the telephone on Election Eve. Remember that if you can't be with us when we're on the radio, you can download the GPB Atlanta mobile app and listen to us there. You'll find Two-Way Street, Political Rewind, On Second Thought with Celeste Headlee, and all your favorite NPR shows on the app. Jonathan Reedy is our producer. I'm Bill Nygut. Hope to see you again next week for another Two-Way Street.